It is episode 76 of Eurobash. We are now in pretty much lockdown here in Dublin, Ireland. We are staying inside. We're washing our hands. We're keeping our distance. And we're getting it done. I, of course, am in Blanchardstown, the capital of Dublin. And Niall is all the way over on the south side in Churchtown. Niall, how are you? I miss you, my friend.
I miss you too, brother. I'm not bad. It's been tough. It's been the same for everyone, but just getting on with it. Head down, do what we can. As you said there, you know, wash your hands, stay away from people, and just sort of lock this shit down, you know. That's all we can do at the moment. I know it's frustrating, but so is life, brother, but we just got to soldier on and fight this shit.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, man. First of all, I just want to say a huge thanks to everyone for the reaction to last week's podcast. Huge numbers and great. We appreciate all of you doing it. We appreciate you all sharing it out and keeping the buzz going. You know, great feedback on Niall's brilliant interview with Colby Covington, a man who pulls no punches, as we know. The legendary Joanna Janjacek, of course, also on the show, and the great Paddy Pimblett and Mason Jones. And we're going to keep on trying to give you the best show we can every week. We know that it is not ideal, the situation we're in, but we know we can all get through it together. I should also mention that there is two extra episodes of the A-Side going out every week on MMAfighting.com's YouTube page. So shows every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with Jose Youngs. Today it was Jose Youngs. On Monday even it was Jose Youngs, Alex K. Lee, and Alima McFarlane. And I'll be joining Jose on Wednesdays and Fridays for his show, and we have more guests lined up for them as well. So just make sure you get on and watch them if you need something to do. They're going down at 5 p.m. Irish time and 6 p.m. for the Central European time all week. But this week on the show, we're going to have Jojo Collarwood, who is preparing for that title with Valentina Shevchenko. We're also going to hear from Mr. Locomotivo himself, Nicholas Dalby, who was supposed to play co-main event with Danny Roberts on that cancelled UFC London event. And we're also going to talk to Pedro Carvalho and Morgan Charrier, who both missed out on title shots due to growing coronavirus concerns and different travel restrictions. And, you know, in terms of Pedro, just the cancellation of an event at the 11th hour. But it continues to be a crazy week, Niall. And funnily enough, stories are still coming out and throwing themselves in front of us, as we've seen with John Jones and more recently this Khabib and Tony fight.
Oh, stop it, man. It's head wrecking on John Jones again. I know we're going to talk about both those situations in a while, but, you know, thoroughly disappointing. You know, it's almost an annual occurrence at this rate. And, you know, same with obviously Tony and Khabib. It just seems as though it's fucking cursed like we always thought it was. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about them in a bit.
Yeah, let's get through these news headlines. There isn't loads, but here we go. Khabib Nurmagomedov has locked down in Dagestan, feels his Ferguson fight is unlikely, which Dana White has been touting as the cure for coronavirus at this stage. Tony Ferguson has apparently been offered a fight with Justin Gaethje. Ariel Helwani was the first to report that for ESPN. Dana White has said that potentially the UFC have four or five venues for that 249 event. He also says that the UFC London fighters will be compensated. As well as that, White has said that he will endeavour to rebook Woodley and Edwards. So it seems Covington v. Woodley has come and gone as quickly as a glimmer man, basically. Cage Warriors Birmingham has been moved to April 18th to October 10th. And Cage Warriors Belfast has been moved from May 16th to September 26th. That is all the news we have for you right now. But we're going to be talking about these various European stories throughout the show. But where better to start than this Khabib Tony situation, Noel? Basically, Dennis Goyko puts out today on RT Sport a translation of a live chat Khabib has done. Yeah. He basically says he made his way to Dagestan after the UFC told him it would 99% be happening in the United Arab Emirates. He's now locked in Dagestan, and he believes that Tony Ferguson is being offered different opponents. It then comes out that it's Justin Gaethje from Mr. Helwani, and I'm sure Khabib would have known that as well, given that he is a stablemate of Justin Gaethje's under Dominance MMA management. First of all, a lot to unpack here. What do you think of this decision to go forward with the event, even though, or it seems to be going forward with the event, even though the fight that it was all meant to be hinged on might not happen here?
I'm not surprised at all, Pete. You know, I tweeted out earlier on, you know, I think this is all about, you know, filling a gap in the market for Dana White and the UFC, you know, more eyes on the sport. People are desperate to watch Jonathan at the moment. And I think this is the case, you know. Eyes equal money for the UFC, and this is very much the way they're looking at it. Any sort of fight, obviously they want their biggest stars there, but if they can't get them there, they're going to do everything else to put a card on in the public eye where people are so desperate at this time to watch any sort of sport. I think we look at even Belarus yesterday. The Belarusian league is going ahead. The only football, I think, on in Europe. And all my feckin' timeline was full of people watching Belarusian soccer. It just says to you how, you know, reliant people are in sport these days. And I think that's Dana White's thinking, that if they get this in the spotlight, there's going to be so much eyes on it. I've said this for weeks. You know, yeah, it's money.
You have always said this, in fairness. You've always, from the UFC's point of view anyway, this has been your line since this whole thing kicked off 3 weeks ago or whatever.
Yeah, and I'm not changing my mind on that. I think it's, you know, straight away we hear the talking about Justin Gaethje from Ariel, that he's been offered that fight. Obviously, he's under Ali as well. But the one thing I don't understand, and, you know, we did say this, I think, 2 weeks ago on the show, that Russia were putting, you know, a travel ban in place. So why did Habib go back to Russia? I don't know. It just seems a little bit strange to me. I'm not sure. Maybe there's personal reasons. I don't know. 100%.
Well, he said he went home because the UFC told him was 99% happening in the United Arab Emirates. Yeah. That's a short flight.
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah. So, listen, I don't know. I think it was a bit strange from the UFC. Maybe a little bit of sending him over there. Should have stayed in the US in San Jose.
Here's the thing. Yeah, absolutely. And the only reason why he left the US is because they told him to. Yeah. Basically, it's not going to happen here. And now you're in a situation where, you know, there's already a tremendous amount of risk here for Habib. And now it seems like, you know, he can't leave. It's a global pandemic. He can't leave his house. This UFC's fault 100% for telling him that it was going to be in UAE. Yeah. But what I want to know, right? Like, I'm looking at this, right? Oh, we're already moving the conversation onto this Ferguson v. Gaethje thing. Very similar to the way they did with Colby Covington and Tyron for the UFC London fight. But why would you do this if you were Tony Ferguson? You're literally risking the biggest fight of your career, the chance to beat the guy who's never been beaten. Like, you're doing this all for the UFC. Like,
I agree.
What happens if Justin Gaethje beats Tony Ferguson and then the fight never fucking happens?
Yeah.
Like, you're just literally putting on a fight to get rid of the fight now. Well, it makes no fucking sense.
There's one of two things happening here in terms of Tony Ferguson. Tony's obviously getting a big, big payoff. You know, a bigger payoff maybe from the UFC than he would have to fight Habib if they still want to go ahead with this. And this very much looks like the plan. And yeah, it is. It's a massive risk for Tony. And, you know, should he do it? Probably not, in my opinion, because this is the fight everyone wants to see. He wants the title. He's always said that that's what it's about for him, beating the best. And the best at the moment is Habib. And, you know, it's five fucking times, man, this fight's fallen out. But, like, the UFC have to answer some questions now with the ban of borders. Crazy stuff, in my opinion, from the UFC. So I don't really know what's going on. But Dana does have a lot of questions to answer. And I hope he comes out and addresses them pretty much. And tonight, for me, would be the ideal time to do it.
No, it wouldn't, because then we'd have to re-record the podcast like we had to do for the last 2 weeks. We'll talk about that more towards the end. But, you know, it's just like, look, there's no doubt about it, Niall. Gaethje and Ferguson is a fucking unbelievable fight.
Unreal.
There's no doubt about it. It's a fantastic fight. But I think my good friend Shaheen Al-Shadi put it best just a couple of hours ago on Twitter when he said, we've already waited 5 years for this fight. Why can't we just wait another 2 months?
Yeah.
You know, or 3 months, whatever it is. It seems absolutely mental.
Yeah. But, like, you know, the other thing is, and maybe they might do this yet. Like, you know, we've Kamaru Usman, who's coming out now in a few minutes, apparently on his Instagram Live, and he's going to make some statement. We've had Colby Covington saying, let's do the Tyron Woodley fight in the White House lawn. We've had, Jorge Masvidal as well shouting about it. So maybe they might put on and try and do a different fight and maybe put that off for a number of months. But as I've said all along, I think they're going to play through with something and try and put on something big. And, you know, if we have to wait 3, 4, 5, 6 months, fuck it, let's do it. You know, I'd rather see Gaethje and Ferguson fall out instead of missing out on that potential Habib-Ferguson fight, you know. So there's other fights there. There seems to be other guys that are willing to jump up. And, you know, obviously throw down. So there's fights there that are huge potential for viewing figures as well. You know, we talked about it. We had him on the show last week. You know, Colby wants Woodley or wants Usman rematch. Like, who wouldn't watch those fights? Or Jorge Masvidal? Any of those combinations, man, would be fucking sick.
Yeah, I agree. But I guess a lot of things are making me, I'm getting to the point now, a lot of things are making me feel like we looked at the fact that, you know, we're looking at this. Why is Dana pressing forward with this event? He seems to be selling it like, you know, I'm never going to let this fight, like, this fight is happening. There's no way it's not going to happen this time. Right? You've lost the fight now.
Yeah.
Habib can't leave Dagestan. You're not going to put the event on in Dagestan. You're not going to move the UFC. You're not going to get US staff into Dagestan or Russia now anyway. But, you know, we brought it up last week. Damon Martin wrote an article about it. The credit ratings that Endeavor UFC have at the moment are bad. Yeah. You know, they've had to pay out $300 million to their investors, Mark Wahlberg and the boys. But this whole situation where they're forcing through, right, they've lost the fight now. Now they're trying to do a completely different fight, which could, in fact, take away the fight that we're all really want here, which is Habib and Ferguson. It's making me feel like they're in far worse financial peril than I imagined.
Listen, I don't know. You know, obviously,
is it just an ego thing with Dana, or is this a business thing? Do they need to make ends meet?
I think it's a little bit of both. But, you know, he's obviously under pressure to fulfill contractual obligations per year. I'm sure that's, you know, obviously on his mind. He's a businessman first and foremost. But it's a large part of this is Dana's ego as well. It's, you know, we talked about it. You know, there's a hole there, as I've said, you know, for the UFC to, you know, come out of this in terms of a business and financial model in terms of getting eyes on them. There's a huge gap. And Dana's always tried to exploit those gaps. And I think it is ego. I think a huge portion of this is ego in terms of, you know, proving other people wrong. Dana always has that chip on his shoulder, right back from the days when he was, you know, knocking on the offices trying to sell his pay-per-views to you know, providers who wouldn't pick it up back in the day when they first purchased the company. So it's very much similar Dana mindset all the way through, and I think that's the way he's working, and I don't think he's going to give up. I think we're going to see something. I really do. I generally think we're going to see something on April 19th, and I wouldn't be surprised.
April 18th.
Jesus. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of the four fights that mentioned, but I wouldn't be, you know, let's just see what happens with Tony and Habib. You know, I'm sure they're trying to look at something or do something. It looks like it's dead in the water, but Habib is sort of, as we listened to the Instagram post earlier on, you know, he is sort of clutching to straws at the moment. He said that they're obviously trying to look for a new opponent for Tony. So, listen, fingers crossed, but I don't know. It's just very head-wracking at the moment. There's so many different permutations and what's going on, and it's all over the shop.
Like this, I saw Casey, the great Casey Lloyd, talking about it earlier. He's like, this situation is growing more grave by the day. Like, we nearly have 1 million cases worldwide here. New York is the epicenter of the situation here. There's a good chance that in 3 weeks' time, America isn't looking so good. Like, I mean, if you think this is bad, in 3 weeks, it's 100% going to be worse. Like, there is no two ways about it.
Yeah,
100% going to be in a worse situation.
100%.
How the fuck can this even go ahead if it gets worse than this? We can't do it in this situation. 3 weeks later, with the situation getting so much worse day by day, how in the fuck are they going to put on an event then?
Yeah,
it's madness.
It should be cancelled. It really should, you know. But Dana just doesn't act like that. He doesn't work like that. He's going to pull every little bit, last ounce out of this if he can. And I think, you know, probably what's going to happen is, as you said there, it is going to get worse and worse, and the doctors are going to tell him to pull it. That's what's more than likely going to happen, in my opinion. But I do still think he's going to try and put on something on the 19th. And listen, you know, it's Dana. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it either. Like, it's just such a conflicted thought process in my mind, you know, and we talked about this when we were obviously watching Cage Warriors a few weeks ago. But yeah, it's going to get worse. Like, we haven't even hit even here in Ireland. I know the States is you know, growing rapidly day by day. It's getting worse. So they're 2-3 weeks, even a month away from possibly being at their highest case of this pandemic.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the first interview of the day. It is Joanne Calderwood returning to the Eurobash. She, of course, is preparing for a fight with Valentina Shevchenko, which is scheduled to go down on June 6th in Perth, Australia, for the flyweight title. However, it may look as though that Habib and Tony isn't the only title fight we might not be seeing on a certain date. We'll leave it to JoJo, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
And she is back, the great JoJo Calderwood, the fighting pride of Scotland, who is gearing up for a flyweight title fight against Valentina Shevchenko on June 6th in Perth, Australia. JoJo, this is crazy times. How are you? How is the preparation going?
It's, you know, considering what we're going through right now, as everyone knows, like, the world's kind of upside down right now. But apart from that, like, everything is going really good. I'm lucky enough to be engaged to my coach, and training's not really stopped. I'm just missing all my training partners. But to be honest, this time right now, we've had a lot more time to do, like, fight study and not get away from game planning. So I'm kind of enjoying this downtime, just obviously missing the company that I strive for.
Right, obviously it's a crazy situation, as you pointed out there. How are things in Vegas? In Dublin here, we're in kind of lockdown at the moment. What is it like over there?
It's crazy. Like, it makes me worried because, like even last week, there was, like, lots of kids in the park. There's still people, like, I'm seeing on my social media, still, like, even people part of the gym, like, out meeting other people. And but this week, I think everyone's kind of got on, okay, shit, this is serious, because obviously Trump has now ordered another 30-day. He's extended it to April 30 if before everything goes back to normal, well, potentially. So I think people are starting to get that. But I was on the bandwagon straight away. Like, I kept myself to myself. I'm, like, one of these people that kind of doesn't want to do anything wrong. Like, even if, like, people are saying, oh, this is bullshit and I don't believe in it and it's just a flu and all that, but I'm, like, someone that likes to play by the rules. So I was, like, straight away, like, on top of that. So we've been good. And yeah, it's strange times. I feel like I'm living in a movie, but trying to stay positive.
Yes, absolutely. I think you've summed it up very well. It's a bizarre feeling, something that we've certainly never encountered in our lifetimes. I'm sure this puts all types of weird strain on a camp, right? Not only do you, as you mentioned, you don't have training partners, but I mean, the fact that the uncertainty of everything, right? Like, I mean, we don't know when life as we knew it is going to go back to normal again. I mean, right now, are you confident that this fight will go ahead on June 6th?
Well, we got word last week that it's going to get pushed back, not because of this whole thing, but something on her end. So I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say that, but but we know for sure that it's not going to happen on June 6th. So I don't know. I'm not sure of what happened or what's what, but yeah, it's been pushed back, but it could be like a blessing in disguise.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that allows you, it gives you a lot more space. And as you said, you're allowed to be a lot more thorough in your preparation, right?
Yeah. Right now, I'm enjoying this, like, one-to-one in, like, just, you know, this is a very important fight for me. And I just feel like it's just, all this is happening and I'm just going to take the best out of this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, now that you've heard that, I guess, you know, you don't have to get into the severe camp mode if you know what's going to happen after June. But I mean, did you guys make plans for it? How would you spar? I know you've put some great posts up of you playing a VR game, which looks great, by the way. But I mean, what was the plan for that? Or would you just be, you know, would you just use your coach basically as your only sparring partner in the lead up to it?
So we have plans in right now that we have another girl who is in strict quarantine. So We're keeping our circle small, and obviously we're cleaning the gym before and after. Everything's closed, but yeah, she's the only person that we are. It's me and my coach and her basically right now, and she's a really good, hard, great Southpaw partner right now, so we're getting some great work in, and I trust her, and that right now we're just doing lots of drilling and lots of game plan stuff.
That sounds amazing. And I'd say that's an incredible ask as well, to have to ask your sparring partner to basically just wrap yourself in cotton wool and come to the gym and let me beat you up for a while.
It's a bit of it's a two-way street. She's beating me up too, you know.
Right. It's crazy, right? Because this means a lot to European fans. The fact that you're fighting for a title, this is a situation we've been hoping for a long time. I guess the thing about Valentina at the moment is she's considered one of the great fighters in the sport. I feel as though, you know, you can challenge her in a way that we haven't seen her challenge before. Do you feel that way as well? Do you expect this to be maybe a far more competitive fight than we've seen Valentina have as the champion so far?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I have every confidence in myself and my team, my coach. He's like, when it comes to game planning, I see him being the best, and I've seen what he does work-wise with other people in the team. He's very knowledgeable in the, you know, the UFC game. I see what he can do in there, and I'm like, yeah, I think a lot of this game planning comes down to the hours and maybe the hours that you come down and put into the UFC game. I have full confidence in myself, and you know, like, a lot of people, she's earned this respect of a lot of people thinking she's unbeatable and she's so dominant and all that kind of stuff, and I respect that, but at the end of the day, I've got a job to do, and the only thing I can have is the confidence in myself and the training going into this fight and showing up on the day.
Is that a motivator? Like, it seems like it, Jojo, when you're speaking about it there, the fact that she has this status as this immovable object at the top of the division, I'm sure that is the type of person you want to be fighting for a world title, right?
For sure. Like, this is why I got into MMA, because before in my Muay Thai career, I was like chasing the best and just wanting to. I was like chasing UK number one, Ruth Ashdown at the time, and like just couldn't get that fight. And I was like, because there's so many other different titles in politics and Muay Thai, I just couldn't get that fight, and I was getting sick of it. And then the whole MMA world came into my life, and I was like, man, this is awesome. And I was like, obviously women wasn't in UFC at the time, but as like Cage Warriors and Invicta, and it was like, you could see that the trend was, okay, if you want to be the best, you have to fight the best. And that's why I was drawn to it so much. And that's been my plan. I want to be the best fighter I can be. And to do that, you have to fight the best. And this opportunity is great. You know, I like sometimes like pinch myself, like, you're like from Scotland and you're like in the best organization, and this is like, this wasn't supposed to happen. Like, there's so many people that if you told them that at the time, then they would like knock you down and be like, that's not going to happen. So it's like, yeah, it's awesome.
Yes, it is. It's an amazing journey you've been on. And I'm just wondering, you know, the fact that this was going to happen in Australia, a lot of travel involved there as well. I'm sure it's not the worst thing in the world to hear that you won't be flying halfway across the world for this fight, like, especially in this situation, right?
Yeah, we were planning to go 2 weeks before, and you know that I think it's like 24-hour flying time, so
crazy.
You're talking like 2 days travel, so yeah, that was going to be. But I love Australia, so I wasn't going to complain about that. It's a great country, and I know there's a lot of UK and Scottish people over there, so yeah, I'm just hoping now it's maybe in the US and it will be closer for everyone to kind of meet in the middle.
Have you any idea of how long it's going to be pushed back by or anything like that, Jojo?
No, I'm not sure. Obviously, what I told you, I don't think it's happening when it was supposed to. I don't really know too much else detail.
Right. Is it hard being away from your family? I know you have great relationships in Scotland. Obviously, I know you have great relationships in Vegas as well, but is it hard when a situation like this is going down to be away from your family?
Yeah, but we have, even though like we're like so far away from each other, we've like kept that connection. I've been traveling now for like 5 years, and obviously it's harder when it was harder when I was in a tougher time, but now I feel like I've found my groove and I'm in a better place. And like you say, I've got a lot of good family around me. Found my man, my better half, so that makes everything better, and I'm in a really happy period of my life. So, and they're very supportive and happy for me too, and we still have that connection. And the technology nowadays, like, I can keep the relationship strong with them, and I'm very grateful for that.
Every time I see you, you're just beaming, you look so happy. You know, what kind of impact does that have on your fighting, your training? I mean, the mental side of this is so important. As we know, we always hear the elite fighters like yourself speaking about, you know, how being positive helps in every aspect of this game. But you being so happy right now, so happy in yourself, is that having a great impact on your fight game?
Yeah, like for luck and opportunities, everything's like, I feel like, so when I was like kind of in a dark place and I was getting injured a lot, and just my lifestyle was like taking a kicking, and I just feel like I was kind of like, I don't want to say victim, but like, you know, I was like, there was so much shit going wrong around me. But the difference was I've changed my lifestyle and I changed my mindset, and started with small baby steps, but I started to see like my luck changed and my body started to react better, so I wasn't injured as much. You know, this sport takes a toll on your mental side and your physical side, so that's really important. And I do really think that opportunities come around, and you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you do start to change, I guess, your actions and your mindset. So that would be the biggest thing, I think. And yeah, your training, like, although my training never really stopped, I feel like I am being more deliberate and I'm being more productive with it. Before, like when I was at strawweight, I was overtraining and just killing myself. And you know, when stuff isn't going right outside of the gym or the octagon, you like try and hammer yourself and you're hard on yourself. So you're probably not being the smartest and making the smartest decisions of, oh, I just need to train harder kind of thing. So yeah.
It sounds to me like you've put all the pieces of the jigsaw in place for you to become a world champion in 2020. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I've had, like, if you look at my career, there's been, like, times where I could have just been, like, the end of my reach being, like, in place for the next title holder, or, you know, I was in the Ultimate Fighter. I was the second seed on that, like, all the kind of things were there in place. But if you looked at my, if you knew what was happening and kind of all around me, then you would like, now me looking back, I'm like, no, that wasn't the right time. I wasn't a champion at that time. I didn't have everything checked and everything in order. So now I feel like I do, and the ball was rolling and everything's going good, and I'm ready to take that step.
That's amazing, Jojo. Great to hear all this. I just have one more question. We've been asking everybody. Obviously, we have a lot of listeners on the show, and they are bored. They are really bored because they have nothing to do and they're locked in their houses. Do you have any recommendations for workouts, books, movies, TV shows, and of course, video games? You're a video game connoisseur now, of course. Anything at all that could help our listeners pass their time while they're in isolation?
Well, I would recommend the VR, like the PlayStation VR. That game that I was playing was Creed, but there's also like there's lots of like horror ones and stuff. And just, you know, we're all stuck inside, or we're kind of restricted to where we're going. So I feel like VR, virtual world, is like where it's at for us anyway. You can get lost in those games and they're pretty funny and fun to do. But I just watched last night The Platform. Don't know if you saw it.
Oh, on Netflix. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah. I have been looking at it. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it was good. It was so strange. Kind of made me have weird dreams last night. But and we're also still on the Black Mirror. I think we've got one more episode of that. And I feel like there should be an episode on this whole thing that we're doing right now. So, that, and I'm going to watch The Hunt tonight. So, obviously, Dana White put that out there that it's looking good. It was good, and I watched the trailer, so it looks good. So, workouts, luckily, we've just put like weights together, and there's so much out there, and we were like, do we have to like put workouts out there, because so many people, there's so much on offer already. But we done a little pad session that we're going to put out.
Brilliant.
Yeah, just keep it simple and baby steps, like don't go all out, I'm going to go on a marathon today.
Oh, rest assured, there's no fear of me going to run a marathon tomorrow, Jojo. But amazing suggestions. It's great to hear from you. We can't wait to see you fight for that world title. And I hope you stay happy and stay healthy. And I hope your family and friends do too.
Yep. Thank you so much. And all the same to you. And thank you for having me. And thanks for your support as always.
You're a legend, Jojo. Talk to you soon.
And thank you so much to Joanne Calderwood. What a crazy experience it must be preparing for a world title fight with this situation going down. She can't even train, basically. She has another fighter wrapped up in cotton wool so they can spar ahead of this fight. It's crazy. Some great recommendations there from Joanne Calderwood as well as to what we can do with our spare time. And based on what I've seen on our Instagram page, them VR headsets look absolutely unbelievable. I think Moya Lane would love that too, if I could get one. But I'd be afraid she might box the head off me on that boxing game, and that would be embarrassing. But, Niall, a situation that we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks is the UFC London fighters not being compensated yet. You know, we're seeing people like Leah McCord come out and talk about it. And we know Leah is very close with Molly and stuff like that. I mean, we're going to hear from Nicholas Dalby in a few minutes now, who basically confirms as positively as he possibly could, in fairness to Nick. He's like, you know, I think it's going to be resolved. We haven't been paid yet. But I mean, is this insane? This is meant to be the biggest fight league in the world.
Yeah.
The week before, your biggest rival had to cancel an event and they paid everyone straight away. Win bonuses too. It's bad, right?
It's terrible. It's, you know, all we want is clarity, and it just seems to be across the board in general at the UFC at the moment. And we talked about, obviously, a few minutes ago in relation to 249. It's just a mass clusterfuck, everything that's going on at the moment. There's no clarification. And I know the situation in the world, but they need to start making decisions and laying them out and executing these decisions. And another couple of things I want to mention as well. I've seen a couple of interviews with Dana White this week, and I can't understand why a couple of our colleagues haven't asked these questions. You know, these are prominent questions for the fighters that should be asked from journalists. We need answers to this. It's very, very frustrating. For obviously the fighters, you know, their families to feed, especially in times like this when guys, you know, some guys obviously we know, and you know, they work other jobs as well. They own gyms, their gyms are closed. They need the fucking money. So there needs to be a decision made, and it needs to be executed and done quickly. it is pretty disgraceful that it's gone on this long. I have to agree now at this point. You know, I gave the UFC the benefit of the doubt for a few weeks, but, you know, get your shit together, make a fucking decision and pay these guys what they should be paid, because it's getting disgraceful at this point.
Yeah, now, in fairness, he has been asked about it, and he said he would compensate them, which is all well and good, but they haven't been paid yet, based on our conversation with Nick Dalby. And, I mean, look, it's an erratic fucking line of work to be in. You know, you can guarantee that these fighters are expecting money coming in. If they're to fight on the 21st, they're expecting it on the week of the 23rd. And they have a lot of expenses they probably have to sort out then with the money that's coming in. And when that money doesn't come in, you're leaving them at a really dead end in a horrific situation where we need to be buying a lot of food.
I just jump in there? Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. But for anyone who's listening to this, very interesting breakdown. Miles Jury, former UFC fighter, Bellator fighter, actually does YouTube videos, and he does his whole pay cut of what the breakdown is. So it's just interesting if guys want to go have a look at that and see how fighters are actually paid. It's really, really interesting that Miles breaks down to the T what he pays his coaches, his team, his nutrition, tax, all that. Very interesting stuff.
Thanks for cutting me off there, Noel.
Sorry.
But they're expecting this. It's not happening. Mm. And, you know, it's all well and good to say it, as I was saying, but to not do it at this stage is crazy. Yeah. And I mean, does this again point to Endeavor UFC being in big financial trouble? Because this is what it's saying to me. Or is it just the fact that they're trying to sort out all these events and stuff that they aren't sorting out the people who have been working for 3 months? I just don't understand it.
I think it's a bit of both. I really do. I think it's very similar to what we were talking about earlier on in terms of Dana, you know, pushing for these fight cards to go ahead. I just think the organization at the moment, there's just so much going on that they're trying to work so fast and at such a fast pace to try and get these events on and fighters here. Logistically, it's obviously a pain in the arse for everything. But yeah, this should have been sorted out, you know, minimum of last week. Like, it's getting ridiculous at this point. And, you know, in terms of getting compensated, they should be fully compensated. They should get their win money as well, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's mental. It's just crazy situation that they're in. But it's a total clusterfuck at the moment, the UFC. Like, look at what's going on. Just look at everything. It's like,
I know, it's crazy.
Boom. I, your head is just thinking 15 different things at once. And I'm sure Dane is in that situation as well, but it's mad. Just mental.
Aaron Chalmers put out last week that no one had been covering this. Obviously, he sent them all the stuff we had done. You know, Aaron's a good lad, but, you know, we're working very fucking hard at the moment. And of course, we are always giving a voice to the likes of the fighters. And we have featured on this podcast fighters talking about this topic for a long time. But look, this is not an easy situation for the fighters to speak about. I mean, how many times have fighters been punished for this kind of thing? Yeah. A lot. So I have a lot of credit for Nick Dalby coming out and speaking about this. You know, he isn't in any way being aggressive about the situation. He's not even being negative about the situation. But it needs to be said that these people haven't been paid yet. And all the fighters should thank Nicholas Dalby for coming out and speaking about this, because, you know, we saw Ashley Evans-Smith talking about it. We saw Jack Shore talking about it. You know, you got to respect these situations. There are so many people here asking, why aren't the media doing the job when we are actually doing our job, but they won't speak about it themselves.
Yeah.
This is why a union needs to be founded. It's absolutely ridiculous. That's on the fighters too. I really hope they get paid. Especially someone like Nick with a young family there. Crazy, just craziness. And this, you know, it's a very stressful situation, especially when you have young kids. And to not have a few quid in your pocket only makes it far more horrific. So look, Nick is in a good place. He seems very positive about the situation. Seems like the situation will be resolved. But yeah, crazy, crazy situation for him being the co-main event of London 2 years after turning his life around, basically, after winning the Cage Warriors title in one of the fights of the year against Ross Houston, then coming back in Copenhagen with that fantastic fight. Just what a roller coaster this guy's been on. We're going to go to our interview with Nick now, and we'll be back in about 15 minutes.
It's the man we have been waiting to hear from. He was supposed to fight in the co-main event of UFC London last weekend on March 21st, but unfortunately, coronavirus concerns led to the event being cancelled. It is none other than the great former Cage Warriors champion and Danish great Nicholas Dalby. Nicholas, how are you, my friend? What a week you must have had.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks. And yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks, that's for sure.
You how are things going? First of all, at home, is everyone all good? Is the family safe?
Yeah, the family is good. We've had no like illness or stuff like that, and so everything's good. And to me, actually, the last couple of weeks has kind of felt like it always does after a fight, where it's kind of like downtime, and I have a lot of time to spend time with my daughter and my girlfriend. The difference is just that the rest of Denmark is in the same situation as me now.
Yes. What is the situation there? In Ireland, we are in lockdown. They aren't calling it lockdown, but it is pretty much lockdown. You can only go out maybe to go to the shops to get something or for a brief exercise. Otherwise, you have to stay in. What's the situation in Denmark?
Well, I guess it's more or less the same. The situation is you're not allowed to gather more than 10 people at a time. You are allowed to go outside, but like you have to stay, you have to keep distance to other people or gatherings. So it's not by law that we have to like stay indoors, but it's highly advised, of course, to limit the contact with other people. And then, yeah, I guess every shop, but besides, you know, convenience stores are closed, stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Is it interesting having of course your daughter, like how do you explain this to your daughter? Of course, she's so young. Is it how do you approach that? Is it hard to explain to a child of that age?
Yeah, she's only 1.5, so she gets basic stuff, like you can ask her to take the stuff to the trash can and stuff like that, but explaining more complex stuff to her, that's a bit difficult right now. But I felt for sure some frustration from her because she's used to going to a nursery every day.
Yes.
So last week she was kind of like frustrated, I could feel, and of course taking it out on us, because like, why are you not taking me to the nursery?
Yes, of course.
So she got a bit frustrated with us, understandably so. But this week's been pretty good. I felt she's adjusted now to being with us the whole day, and me taking her for a lot of walks and taking her to the playground and stuff like that. So,
well, that's good. But
yeah.
It sounds like you guys have got a good handle on the situation. But of course, I'm sure it was a lot more dramatic 2 weeks ago when, you know, we began to get reports that UFC London wouldn't be happening. And you had a hell of a fight on that card. I mean, like everybody I spoke to was looking forward to you and Danny Roberts so much. The style matchup I think it would have been impossible to let us down, us fight fans. Everybody was really pumped for that. I guess about 2 weeks out from the event, you know, events start being cancelled. I mean, before you had touched base with the UFC, were you kind of thinking, right, this isn't going to happen? And how does that feel when this awareness is coming to you when you are probably in peak shape? You're 2 weeks out from a huge fight. How do you react to this as you see events closing down around the world?
Well, I felt pretty confident that the event would still happen, but probably just behind closed doors. My good friend Damir Hadzovic, who was fighting in Brazil, and that's what they chose to do there. So maybe I was just naive or optimistic, but I felt like that was what's gonna happen. But yeah, it was interesting for sure to be following that situation and reading all the MMA media, and like I just took it day from day to day and almost hour to hour. I think in the back of my head I kind of prepared myself for the option that it might be cancelled, but it seemed unlikely because the UK was so relaxed about the whole situation, so it seemed like it would be able to happen. But then that US travel ban came in and was decided, and I think that apparently made the whole thing fall apart. So I was kind of prepared for it, but it still sucked, and I was very frustrated about it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I remember the first we heard was that they were trying to relocate specifically Leon Edwards and Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were saying, have the other fighters been contacted? How did this relocation option, you know, been suggested to you guys? Did you hear anything about you and Danny possibly moving to the US as well?
No, and I knew when that got suggested that that was only going to be regarding Leon Edwards and Woodley, because it was specifically just that fight mentioned by Dana. And, you know, anyway, I don't have a visa that would allow me entrance to the US. And then so I knew when that was debated that that was only regarding the main event fight.
Right.
And I wasn't contacted about it either as well. But presumably because they knew that neither Danny or I would have the right visas to be allowed into the US.
Was it ever an option? I know that Fabinski and Darren Stewart went and competed on that Cage Warriors card in Manchester, it turned out to be, on the day before UFC London was going to happen. And of course, you and Graham, great relationship. You were a Cage Warriors legend. Was that ever an option that was floated to you or Danny for the Cage Warriors card?
I don't know if Danny was given the option or how his position was on it. I was given the option, but for several factors, it wasn't possible. Of course, it's me stepping into the cage, but I depend on a tight knit team to be able to do that, and there was just simply too many unknowns for that to be able to take place. Unfortunately, so I was offered the opportunity, but it wasn't possible.
We officially got word, I believe it was, Nick, on the Sunday before the event. So the event was going to happen on Saturday, but we got an email.
Yeah.
I think it was Sunday saying, right, it's officially been cancelled. Was that the day you guys found out as well? I know you probably knew at this stage, right? At this stage, it was all trending towards the event being cancelled anyway. But was that when you officially
all my knowledge about the situation unfolding, I got from the media.
Wow.
And that might sound a bit weird, but like my manager is based in Europe as well. So I think what happened was that all of these decisions were sent out to managers who then relayed on to the fighters. And because some of the fighters were based in the US, you know, the word got out to the media and the press. So instead of just trying to keep it in, I think UFC just released a general statement, but that was probably during the night in Europe. So, and before my manager had the opportunity to wake up and relay information, you know, I might have read it on some page somewhere. So, you know, it is what it is. Information moves fast in this world, so you can't always count on getting the information in such a rapidly developing situation. You can't, you know, expect to get it from the true source all the time.
You weren't expecting a phone call from Dana White, basically.
No, I'm. I don't think I'm in his phone book yet.
yes.
Hope a couple of years down the road that might have changed, but not yet. No.
Is that a frustrating situation to be in? You know, I can. I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and I'm kind of thinking I would be so anxious if I was in that situation, like trying to debate: is this happening? Is it not happening? Do I have to leave my family? Am I going to be able to go with my team? And then to not really be hearing anything directly from the horse's mouth, the UFC, is that annoying, frustrating at the time?
It was frustrating at the time, but I get how it's set up, because once you start communicating directly to the fighters, perhaps, and I guess it kind of depends on what setup you have. I'm set up so my manager relays information to me instead of me getting it directly.
Right.
Which in some situations are good. Most situations it is. That's how I've chosen it to be. But in some situations, yeah, you kind of maybe you miss out on getting the info 2 hours before. But like in the big scheme of things, how much does that matter? Yes. But yeah, for sure, it was a bit interesting for this particular situation, to kind of reading the MMA websites and stuff like that and see what was happening. But again, this is a quite exceptional situation. So, you know, I don't want to nitpick about I got my information. Like it evolved so fast. So like it was better to have the information coming out anyway. Just, yeah.
There has been a lot said about the payment of fighters. There's been we were speaking to Ashley Evans-Smith last week, who was supposed to fight Molly McCann, and she, you know, had flown in from America only to be sent back as soon as she got in. We spoke to Jack Shaw as well. I know Dana White has since said you guys would be paid, and we're very glad to hear that because we know the immense work you guys do ahead of these fights, even before you step in the octagon. But have you been paid yet, or is that process still ongoing?
It's still ongoing. It's still unresolved. And I think before there's any, you know, clear definition of what's going to happen, you know, it's not a subject I feel needs much discussion until it's kind of resolved, if that makes any sense. Because, until things are decided, it's difficult to come with any... inputs on it.
I get you. But so you guys haven't been communicated, like if you're getting show win, all that kind of stuff. Is that what you're saying? You don't really know the nitty gritty of it, so to speak?
Not yet. All I know is my manager is in dialogue with UFC, and I think what's happening, what's going on is this is a huge situation, and they had to cancel more cards, and like they're trying to take a big picture look at how they're going to do things. And I don't know if there's insurance in place and they have to take account for that or whatever, but it seems like they're taking their time, and they're doing that because they want to be able to make, you know, proper decisions and not just rash in the spur of the moment decisions. So it's taking some time, and it's a bit frustrating. The first of the month is coming up and I got bills to pay, but, but you know, I'm pretty sure it's gonna be resolved in a nice way. And if it doesn't, you know, then we'll take it from there. But I feel confident.
Yeah, I really hope it happens. I mean, you guys are the pinnacle of the sport. You are elite athletes at the very top of your class. I feel like this is just me speaking, Nick, like for Bellator to come out and pay their guys, I know their fighters had weighed in, just in terms of PR, it doesn't look great for UFC when their biggest rival is maybe sorting their fighters out like that. But I'll move on. I know we don't want to spend too much time on that. How are you, though? I mean, after all this happened, like, do you come away with this with some type of post-traumatic stress because of the ordeal? Because it's insane. As you said, this is a situation none of us have ever been through before, including the UFC, including the organizations. Yeah. I mean, is it hard to just kind of comprehend what happened here?
In a way, yes. and in a way, no. I think I hit, a couple of days after it was cancelled, I kind of hit a wall where I was feeling a bit annoyed with everything regarding the situation. And like, especially when I had calendar reminders come up for, oh, now you're supposed to take this flight to London and stuff like that. I had a couple of tough hours inside my head, but I think because this situation is affecting not just me, but like everybody on the fight card and everybody on the globe.
Yes.
It kind of, I think differently about the situation. Like, had it been me who got injured, or had it been me who made some mistake that you know, got the fight canceled or whatever, I would have felt bad about it. But this is just, you know, it's a global situation, and many people are way worse off than us. So, and you know, I'm healthy and in shape to fight another day, and that's, you know, the most important part. Of course, I still hope that the specific fight with Roberts is going to happen when we're able to down the road again. But in the big picture, I'm still healthy. I'm still able to fight almost whenever. So, it's a bummer that this fight didn't happen for many, many reasons. But like, what can you do?
Absolutely. I mean, I we were speaking about it just before we came on air here, but is that a nice reminder for you you've posted about how 2 years ago you began your comeback, and look where you are now. I mean, I know you didn't get the fight last weekend, but you were going to be the co-main event of UFC London after one fight, after coming back and having a sensational fight in your return And after winning the Cage Warriors title, I mean, does that kind of allow you to kind of be thankful for everything that's happened in this 2 year period?
Yeah, like in the looking at a big picture, you know, it's I'm in a rather good situation. I'm way better off than I was 2 years ago, personally and professionally. So it's unfortunate. It's fucking annoying to have this thing happen. But again, it's a global situation. It's out of anyone's hands, basically. So you just gotta roll with it and get the best out of it. Am I annoyed that I won't be able to fight in the co-main event of UFC London? Yes,
of course. We all are very upset about this, Nick.
yeah. But the point that I'm getting to is like, I have so much self-belief. Like, I'm just talking personally now. Like, that opportunity is gonna come up in the future, regardless. So it didn't happen now, and it sucked because like this fight was gonna be like almost to the date on my 10 year anniversary as a professional fighter, and UFC London was the first UFC event I went to as a fan. So you know, wow. O2 Arena. There would have been many like things happening for this fight that would have been like full circle moments. So from that perspective, it was annoying, and you know, I was very excited for the fight, felt in shape, but none of it's like training wise. I'm still in the same shape. I'm still as good technically. Now I even have more time to just kind of heal up from some of the minor injuries you get throughout fight camp and stuff like that. So like in the big picture, it's unfortunate, but it's not like a huge setback.
Well, that's good. It's fantastic to hear your attitude towards all this. We have, as you know, we have a lot of listeners who need some suggestions, some advice on how to deal with this time. And I see you're always outdoors. You many activities all the time, always up to something as Nicholas Dalby. So I said, I better ask you, what would you recommend our listeners do, the great Eurobash followers?
Well, I think, okay, big question. I think in general, if it's allowed or an option in the country you're based in, yeah, get outdoors. Get some fresh air, get some of that sun if it's out. You know, go for a long walk, maybe 1 or 2 hours. You know, get your body moving, do some exercises. That always helps as well. This is something I usually do anyway, and something I've done a lot since I kind of came out of depression as a way to alleviate slipping back into that. So you know, try and make the best of the situation. Get out, get some exercise. It is what it is. You know, you can't really change what's happening, so you just gotta make the best of it. Staying active for sure helps. Do projects that you usually don't have the time for, stuff like that.
All fantastic suggestions, Mr. Dalby, and I want to thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us about this, and I hope you and your beautiful family stay very safe and you continue to enjoy your walks, and I hope your daughter doesn't get too annoyed with you for keeping her out of school.
No, I think she's good. I'm actually very much enjoying spending some time with her, because usually when I'm training for fights, it's pretty hectic and I don't have too much time. So the good and the bad situation for the last couple of weeks has been that I felt like really connected with her on an entirely new level that I haven't felt before. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So all is good. I hope you and your newest one stays safe as well. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much, Nick. And I hope they get that fight back on. And I'm sure a UFC London co-main event will come your way again, my friend.
Oh, yes.
Stay safe. All the best, Nick.
And always a pleasure to speak to the great Dane, Nicholas Dalby. What a man. What a haircut.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of Nicholas Dalby, a Cage Warriors legend as he is, we must talk about the cancellation of Cage Warriors Belfast and Cage Warriors Birmingham. Not cancellation, postponement, but significant postponement, especially when you consider a lot of the hype for Cage Warriors Belfast was the fact that Rhys McKee was potentially going to fight for a Cage Warriors title. And then, of course, we had UFC Dublin coming in August. And, you know, we thought that, and everybody seems to think it. And Graham Boylan pretty much told us, had Reese won that fight, he would have been straight to the UFC. You know, said it was definitely a possibility. Anyway, I think, you know, that was needed, that event, to really solidify that for Reese, to become a champion, to win when he is the star attraction in his hometown. The ovation, the love he would have got there would have pushed him over the line for me. Is it enough to go to the UFC now on the back of a win over Hakan Foss, Niall?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. And I actually, you know, Reese texted me the other day, and he obviously, you know, massive frustrations. But I think, you know, knowing Reese and knowing what he's capable of doing, and we saw that basically, you know, starching Hakan Foss with a jab. We've talked about the touch of death for years, man. He's very frustrated, but I wouldn't be surprised if Reese tries to push for this UFC card now, because they're going to need local talent. I think it's always sort of a theme and a narrative the UFC look to implement on regional European cards. And why not? Why not give him a one-fight deal? Why not give him a shot? Because they're going to need guys.
That's never going to happen. A one-fight deal is never going to happen.
Yeah, that is true. A one-fight deal is very unlikely. But why not? You know, Reese is a guy, I think, you know, he'd compete very well in that UFC 170-pound division. I'd have no qualms about throwing him in there. But, you know, whether it's enough, I'm not too sure. We don't know what's going on as well at the moment. The UFC might push this back to September as well. You know, we just really don't have a clue, Petey, in the next 3 months what's going to happen with this pandemic. So, yeah, but the right call from Cage Warriors to call it off, definitely 100%. But, yeah, Reese is a guy I'd be comfortable with going to the UFC now at this point.
Oh, no, I mean, of course we want to see an Irish guy in the UFC. He's a fantastic record. He's won world titles at lightweight. I mean, he's top of the list. We've been saying this for years. There's no doubt about it. But, like, you know, that is a huge thing he's missing out on here. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, the fact that you don't get to do that, I think he's in a far more precarious situation. Like, I felt as though that fight happens, he definitely goes. And now I'm like, I don't know, man. I really don't know.
Yeah, but you know, the UFC Dublin card might be pushed back. We don't know where we're going to be. I know, you know, ifs and buts and all that, you know. So it could actually work out in his favour if it is pushed back a little bit. But yeah, Reese's head is wrecked, totally wrecked at the moment. He's moving gaff as well, I believe, in this sort of climate. You know, it's not easy. Jeez. A lot of things going on in his head at the moment. And but Reese is the kind of guy, you know, we've seen him in the past deal with adversity. It's not going to stop him from his end goal and his dream. He's a very...
It's not, I'm not for a second suggesting that, like, this has nothing to do with Reese. Yeah. But it is, you know... The whole thing was that event gets him there.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. It's a lot of upset for everyone.
And the buzz in the Irish scene. Like, I mean,
It was a semi-final, as we talked about, Petey. It was that build-up to that UFC Dublin card.
Yeah, it was. It's a big one. It's a big event to lose out on for Reese, without a doubt. Let's see. Well, again, as you say, we don't even know if August is going to go ahead with the UFC, so we'll have to wait and see. And look, Natoya Svedrick is another guy there, a middleweight well, and they are crying out for middleweights in the UFC, you know, and he's just beating Webb for the title. He was going to get that chance to main event in Birmingham. So, I mean, you know, I feel like this is a very tough one for those two guys in particular, right? Because they were going to have that hometown moment that we have seen do so much good work for fighters who are trying to get to the octagon.
Yeah, it's just it's heartbreaking for those guys, but it's just the sort of, you know, time we're in at the moment. Like, you can't really rely on anything happening from one day to the next, literally, which is just fucked up. I never thought we'd see a moment like this, and it's very, very tough for a fighter at the moment to wrap their head around anything. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys, and I'm sure you have, with the situation. It's, you know, cutting weight and everything, like, do you know what I mean? And they don't know whether it's happening or not. And we saw that, obviously, with the last sort of UFC London and Bellator cards. It's just fucked up shit, man. But there's nothing we can do about it. You know, it's out of our control.
Speaking of people who miss out on title opportunities due to coronavirus, we will now go to our interview with the great Morgan Charrier, a man who is so passionately supported in France.
Morgan Charrier, did you ask him questions like this, Petey?
Yeah,
Morgan.
Right, so he left France early to get to that event.
Yeah, I know.
He rang his opponent and was like, "You're gonna get locked in your country if you don't leave now." This is according to Morgan. The opponent says, "Oh yeah, we'll definitely leave. Morgan gets there on Monday, Wednesday, his opponent rings and says, I can't travel anymore. So devastated. He returns to France on the Wednesday then, doesn't even stay for the event. And look, it's a crazy situation for him. And he dropped a bit of a bomb there on Mads Burnell.
What's he saying?
You know, Mads Burnell, it seems like Morgan isn't too confident that Mads will be fighting with Cage Warriors for his next fight. He doesn't know. And he's kind of saying, if Mads Burnell doesn't fight me, he's going to get stripped of the title. I'm fighting for the title, whether it's Mads or it's not. Malice really there, as he said to Mads, but just the situation, that's one to look out at. I know Mads has recently signed with Ali Abdelaziz and Dominance MMA.
Oh.
Someone who would definitely be a good man to get you to the UFC, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But interesting one. Always a pleasure to speak to Morgan. Crazy, crazy situation, of course, that led to the cancellation of his interim title fight. Very interested to see what happens next here. But here's Morgan. We'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Once again, we are joined by the fighting pride of France, Morgan Charrier, who was supposed to fight for the Cage Warriors interim title last weekend in Manchester, an event which originally was meant to happen in London, but unfortunately for Morgan, his opponent did not travel to the event, and he even tried to make a new fight when he found out his opponent would not travel, but he couldn't make it happen. Morgan, a lot of people were very excited to see you fight last weekend. Obviously, the coronavirus situation has had a big impact on the sport in general, but how did it feel to have everything fall apart at the last minute?
Oh, it was heartbreaking, you know. Me and my team, we traveled on Monday to be sure to leave the country, the France, before the lockdown. So we have taken our flight early, and I've had a chat with my opponent, and I said to him, you need to come right now if you don't want to get locked out. You can go back to your country after the fight, but you can't come if you are locked down. So everything was good. My opponent was saying, yeah, I will come, and then the Wednesday, he said, I don't come.
Well,
and so everything was fucked. And we tried to find a replacement, but find someone for on 2 days' notice to make the 145. It's really hard. So no fight.
Well, that sounds incredibly frustrating. How are you very angry with Darko Banovic because he didn't get on the plane when you said so? I remember you tweeted that you were traveling early, and this got a lot of traction online. I mean, did you think after talking to Darko that he would leave immediately for the fight? How do you feel about him in general?
Yeah, I'm a bit angry because I think he know he didn't want to come, you know, and I think his way to pull out honorably. So he make us trust him and say, yeah, I'm coming, but you know, he wouldn't, and then he didn't, and he let me like that, no fight. And if he just tell us, you know, I don't want to come, the situation, and I can understand, and we could find someone in 1 week notice, but 2 days before the fight, that sucks.
Yes, absolutely. So what happened when you got to England? You did you arrive in England on Monday? I'm sure it was a very confusing situation. I mean, the event was supposed to happen in London. It gets moved to Manchester. As we know, yes, coronavirus is spreading around the world as this is happening. What was it like to be there in London on fight week?
It was really stressful, you know, because in 2 hours with my team, we said, you know what, we go right now. So we have booked ticket and we're coming from France to London. We take the our staff, and we have it in London. We have taken an Airbnb, and we have staying there in it. So we don't, you know, we don't go where there are too much people to don't get that virus. And we have 20 and in the Airbnb. We stay there. I was cutting weight, and that was a stressful situation because about one day in London, they say, okay, no, we go to Manchester. So we have to book another ticket to go to Manchester. And I'm like, oh, I hope I'm gonna fight because it's really hard. You know, I'm not in my house. It's hard to cut weight when you don't have everything you are used to. So this was a bit stressful, and then my opponent don't come and everything.
It's crazy. So, yeah. This is so crazy. So what day did you find out? Wednesday that your opponent pulled out?
On Tuesday night, I think. My manager started to tell me he will not come, and they are trying to find something. And then on Wednesday morning, they tell me that they are trying to make something. And then on Wednesday, they tell me, no, you're not going to fight. Get back home.
Wow. So 2 days before the fight, that is so hard to take. Did you try to seek an other opponent? I know Perry Goodwin and Steve Aimable were on the card too. Did you try to see if one of those guys would fight you instead? Was there any options on the card?
Yeah.
What happened?
Definitely. Ralph tried. Ralph said to Steve and Perry, if one of them want to fight me, and the other one should have a fight with a guy they find to take on short notice. This will be a fight on lightweight. But none of these, or this, both of these guys say okay. They say no, we are gonna fight each other. So they say no.
Oh no.
I understand, but I would prefer that one of them take the fight against me. But I do, you know, they have prepared the fight, they have game plan. So I understand they don't want the fight.
So when did you go home? Did you stay? Did you go to the event on Friday? How did you play it? Did you go home on Thursday when you knew you weren't going to fight, or what did you do?
No, I'm going back straight back to France on Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure you feel as though that's a good idea in light of everything that has happened.
Yeah, it was better because if I don't know, maybe everything got pretty fast, and then everything got locked out, and I get blocked in London. I prefer to come back home and stay there with my family because I had no fight, so I had nothing to do, you know, in London or Manchester. So was prefer to come back.
What is the situation like in France? Are you and your family and friends safe?
Yeah. We're safe, but I think all the world are in the same situation now. Mm. So everything is locked up. We don't get out or just to buy food, but we don't go out. We are not allowed to go out. So we are just waiting until 2 weeks again, and maybe they will say we still get confined. So we'll see.
How are you dealing with everything after this situation happened? And I'm sure you had completely changed your life in preparation for this fight, only for it to be taken away on 2 days' notice. And now you can't even leave your house. Is this a hard situation for you?
Yeah, it's really hard because for this fight, I've made everything to win it. So I've had a hard preparation, and I was just doing training, sleeping, and now I'm stuck in my home. But you know, I'm staying positive. I know I will fight again for that title, so that's just a matter of time. So I'm training in my house. I have a small room where I have weight, also bike and a row. So I still manage my shape, and I'm just waiting to all of this be over, and then we'll go back to training. I will still be in good shape, and I'll be ready to go and fight someone to get that title.
Yes. You said you know you're going to fight for the title. Did Graham say that you will be fighting for the interim title, or do you think you will be fighting Mads Burnell?
I don't know. I don't know what Mads is doing, but I think he didn't want to come back to Cage Warrior. He's taking his time, and he's the champ, so he had to defend his belt, and he had one time where he can say, I'm doing other things, so I was supposed to fight to the interim title belt, but no, this fight is gone. He don't have a lot of choice. He come back, and we fight, or he don't come back, and he gets striped. I think that's logic.
Who would you, do you think, you know, who do you think you should fight for the title? A lot of people are saying Perry Godwin. I mean, if it's not Mads, a lot of people think Perry Godwin put on a fantastic display against Steve Aimable, a guy who fought Mads for the title recently. Do you think Perry Godwin would be a potential opponent if Mads Burnell is stripped of the title and you need a challenger?
I think this is the guy who had his win. He's on 3 or 4 fight win streak. I think he made some good performance. And right now, if you look at the featherweight cage warrior roster, he's one of the guys you can see fighting for that title. So yeah, maybe I'm not the one in charge of that. It's the matchmaker, but yeah, Perry could be an option for the cage warrior.
Yes, I would definitely love to see either you and Mads or you and Perry, two great fights. But I really wanted to ask you, Morgan, everything, the last time you were on this show, I was saying, like, everything is set up for you in 2020. You are fighting for the Cage Warriors title. You are clearly a hugely famous fighter from France, where the sport has just become legalized. And now this happens. This is crazy. Everything was supposed to happen for you this year. It felt like it would. Is that hard to deal with? The fact that it all seemed to be right in front of you, within touching distance, and now there's so much uncertainty.
Yeah, really. This year is my year. I'm going to kill everything. And if this is why this is heartbreaking, because I should be right now the Cage Warrior World Champion, Athlete World Champion, and then in June I will pass off Mads be maybe in London, and then if I get this win, got the UFC call for a French show in 2020, but now I don't know what's going to happen. but you know, that's the fight game. So I just need to be patient, keep winning, keep doing great performance, and maybe I will still get this call in the end of 20 or maybe next year, but I just need to win that belt and stay in the champ.
Are you still able to film your show? I know you told us last time that you have this hugely popular show on YouTube. Are you still able to make content for your fans, or is the show taking a break for a while?
No, we are still doing things. My friend, so Kamel, who lost the weight, is still doing things. I'm still doing things. We don't make any of the show, I don't know how to say it, but...
In the same format, the way it usually is, it probably is
different,
right?
It's like we don't put anything on YouTube related to this, but we continue to work. Even if he's confined, he's training and eating good, but we can't, film and edit right now. It's a bit complicated, but we are doing other stuff like... I record my training. I record a lot of things, so people keep saying things and I'm staying active, and they see a lot of things. So we keep doing our thing.
I just hope he doesn't get fat again, because you've put an awful lot of work in, Morgan. You don't want this guy eating all the cakes.
No, I send him message every day, like, what are you eating? What are you doing right now?
I wanted to ask you about your dog. A lot of people have been tagging me in videos of your dog. He looks incredible. Is he giving you a lot of fun in this time of isolation? A dog is a great friend to have in these circumstances, right?
Yeah, really, really. He's a really funny dog. He's young. He's like 1 year old, but he's really smart. And he I don't know why, but he's funny. He's doing everything well. But I'm training him, and he know a lot of stuff. I don't know what to say, but he can do a lot of things. But sometimes he do weird things, and then I record it, and people like to see it.
Yes, I love the video of him sitting down with his arm resting on the chair. Amazing.
Yeah, he do this every time on the couch, everywhere. I don't know why he sit like that.
What's his name?
Ares.
Oh, beautiful. That's a great name. A great name for a fighter's dog, especially.
Yeah.
So I know we don't know when we're going to be getting you back in the cage. I know a lot of our listeners want some advice on what they should do during their time in isolation. Do you have any films, workouts, video games, anything, TV shows, films our listeners should check out while they're in isolation?
Well, that's sad because I think they don't all speak French.
Yes, true.
Every day at 6 p.m., I do a workout online on the Instagram of Decathlon.
Wow.
It's a French... you know?
Decathlon?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a sport market in France, big one. And so I'm working for them for the confinement, and every day at 6 p.m., I go live on Instagram and I do workouts and people can follow it. So,
well,
that's cool. That keep the people active and positive, and I'm doing my stuff. Everybody like it, and that's good.
Will I be able to do the workout, or is it for athletes? Because I'm not very athletic.
No. I try to make it available for everybody. You know, I say you can do this if you don't have the level, or you can do that. And then me, I do the hardest level, and sometimes I do the easiest, so everybody who watch can do something.
Amazing. I'm going to check this out, and I hope all of our Eurobash listeners also check it out, because they are big fans of yours, Morgan, and I really, really hope that this year gets back on track for you. I think you have the world at your feet, and I hope you can get everything that you're looking for in 2020. And I hope your family stay safe as well, my friend. And your dog, Aries, of course.
Yeah.
All the best, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And thank you very much to the great Morgan Charrier, as we say in Blanchardstown, and his dog Aries. What a legend. Great to hear about him. I love that dog. Who was it that tagged me in there last week? I think it was Sean Denny, the great Denny Rants. He tagged me in some pictures of Aries. He's a beautiful doggy. I hope everyone is staying safe in France, of course.
Yeah, big time.
Let's talk about it. John Jones.
Again, oh, pizza. God. Does it ever end? Is there a year we can just go without John Jones not getting in trouble? Seriously, it's fucking madness. Like, when is the guy going to learn? Like, come on. It's, you know, he's going to end up getting locked up. He's going to end up getting stripped of the title. The UFC are going to have to act in this. And this is another interesting thing that, you know, in the next few days, if we hear from Dana what he's going to do. And, like, what do you do with him? Like, it's got to that point now where he's had so many chances. Like, what do you generally do with him? It's bonkers.
Yeah, for those of you who missed the news, the UFC light heavyweight champion faces multiple charges, including aggravated DWI from an arrest on Thursday morning in Albuquerque. You know, with the footage has been revealed of him, you know, doing the sobriety test, claiming he you know, I think he says he has ADHD or anxiety when he's trying to do the test. But like, look, before, you know, I'm not here to lambast the dude. Jeez, we've done that like every single time, and obviously doesn't really do much for the situation. But this guy clearly has an alcohol or drug problem, and it hasn't been dealt with, no matter how many times he's pretty much made an example of himself. This is a UFC product. This is a guy that they took into their roster as a young kid. He became one of the youngest champions ever. He has been dominant. He has had run-ins with USADA. He's had run-ins with the law. You know, he's a problem child. He's a problem child of the UFC, without a doubt. But he's got a problem. He's got a drug problem. He's got an alcohol problem. Certainly some type of problem with substance abuse, and it has not been corrected. You know, even when we hear him speaking to Ariel Helwani and stuff like that, these big interviews he did, you know, on his redemption tour, he talks about how he's still drinking and he still smokes and just not as much. I have a handle on it. That's crazy, man. You clearly don't have a handle on this. You're out of control. It's insane to think our LeBron James is on the side of the road, you know, with a gun in his car, smoking joints and talking to homeless people, basically. I don't know. This is all alleged, of course. You know, from the police reports that Mike Heck wrote up for MMAfighting.com, it seems as though, you know, they were responding to a gunshot, and there's a bullet beside Jones's car. Like, this is fucking wild.
It's worrying, not just for the people around him. It's worrying for him and everyone else that's involved with Sean Jones. And I think sort of the interesting thing as well you can sort of take from this is a lot of his team aren't really aware of what's going on. I think we've spoken with members of his team before on this show, and you know, there's a sense of he's the sort of master manipulator, Jon Jones, of every sort of situation. And it's very worrying. And I think the UFC have to act immediately on this and make a very swift and harsh decision, whether it's them helping him out and, you know, put him into rehab, or, you know, stripping the title, maybe all of the above, or maybe suspending him indefinitely for a longer period of time. And I think that example does need to be set at this stage, because, you know, he's jeopardizing his health and the people around him and the public around him. Obviously, you know, getting in a car under the influence again. It's just crazy. It's such, like, right, how many times has this happened? Like 5-6 times.
Countless. But yeah. Why do we suddenly expect UFC to do something responsible?
That is true.
Jesus, there's a global pandemic going on. They're trying to get as many international fighters into the fucking confined space as they can.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the right thing to do? Like, I feel like, you know, I think you've got to strip him of the title. You've got to strip him of the title. But I think cutting him, that could lead to even bigger problems. You know, you're kicking a guy into the mud when he's already down there. You know, I don't know if a guy who has these substance abuse issues and stuff like that would react well to being cut from a roster. Even though, as you said, this is not the first time, and it's hard to think it will be the last, because people don't even care anymore. Yeah. Do you remember he got into an incident in a gentleman's club last year or whatever it was? No one even gave a shit. Like the next day it came and went. Mm. And, you know, it's just basically that's the behavior they expect from Jon Jones now. And this guy is like, he gets so annoyed, and, you know, he has this air about him that who are we to be asking about this? Like, people are genuinely concerned for one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Definitely.
This is mental.
I agree. And I think, you know, I'm not sure the way the US system works in terms of, you know, what they do with repeat offenders. But he must be at a stage now where he could be looking at a lot of jail time, because it just seems that he's not learning his lesson, and he's going to be in front of a judge again, I would imagine, soon. And you can't imagine, when it's accumulating as much as it has over the last years, that it's going to be a good end result for Jon Jones. And maybe it's a blessing in disguise that something like this might happen to him.
Here's another thing, Noel. It's not like it was when he was this untouchable dude. He's not been the most convincing champion at the moment either. Like, I mean, he's had two exceptionally close fights recently. Does that change the situation when it's maybe he isn't box office TV? He isn't putting exclamation marks on his wins. Is it a different situation because of that, maybe?
Yeah, well, maybe it is. You know, who knows what Dana White's thinking? I don't mean to laugh about that, but, you know, it really is up to Dana, these sort of decisions at the end of the day. And he's never had the greatest relationship with Jon Jones, and that's not going to help either with this happening again. So, yeah, maybe the UFC might just be glad at this point to, you know, wash their hands and maybe get rid of him. You know, who knows what's going to happen. I do think the UFC need to make some sort of example from Jon Jones here this time more than ever, but, you know, I wouldn't bank on that either. Who knows with Dana, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the coming weeks with this, because, as I said there, you know, if he is in front of a judge again, it can't be too good for Jon Jones.
Is he a lost cause?
I think so at this point. I'm not surprised, you know. Like, you just go, for fuck's sake, here
we go again.
How many
times
like,
can
that's
you
what I mean.
Throw the world away? Like, yeah. I mean, this is a guy that's the world at his feet since
and
day
listen,
one.
And you made a great point there. His performance have definitely deteriorated. We sort of gave him that sort of bit of leeway, you know, in the fight against Santos, you know, that, you know, he's back from a long while out, a couple of injuries, all that sort of shit. And then we saw the performance, obviously, against Dominic Reyes, but, you know, Reyes was very good in that fight, so was Santos, don't get me wrong, but it was far from vintage Jon Jones. We didn't see some of the improvements we saw when he fought Cormier. So listen, I don't know, it is a mad situation, but yeah, there could be that element of it as well, that he's on the downward spiral in terms of his fighting career, and that they might just go, let's just forget about it.
It's a very, very tricky one, man.
Big time.
It's
But just disappointing.
It's nearly
again,
lost the shuffle, though, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's just so much like this
it is,
thing.
But like,
now,
people, as you said there, Petey, people have sort of. We've forgotten about it already after 24 hours because people are so fed up of this happening. They're so sick of it happening. It's such a regular occurrence that we've moved on to the next biggest story, which is obviously Khabib and Tony sort of falling by the wayside by the looks of it. So that's what I mean. Like, it's not this long, dragged out sort of saga anymore where people invest so much of their time and emotions into it that they sort of just don't give a shit anymore because he's just a lost cause possibly at this point.
All right, gun to your head, did they strip him of the title?
Yeah, I think so.
Do they suspend him?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. That's yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. They don't cut him, though, I don't think.
No, I don't think so, no.
Right. Yeah, well, look, let's hope John gets a handle on his situation. Definitely. And I mean that genuinely from the bottom of your heart. It's terrible to see a talent like this, one of our greatest ever fighters, continue to go into this spiral. But look, we spoke to Morgan Charrier about his title opportunity with Cage Warriors being taken off the plate on fight week. How about it being taken off the plate on fight day? Because that's what happened to Pedro Carvalho ahead of his fight with Patricio Pitbull, the biggest fight of his life.
Yeah,
absolutely unbelievable. We've had Pedro on the show a number of times now, but every time he's on, we learn something new about him. And what a story he tells today about how the birth of his son completely led to this unbelievable run he is putting together with Cage Warriors. He is in Portugal now enjoying
with
some
Bellator.
Time with his family. Sorry, what did I say?
Cage Warriors.
Oh, sorry. I was already on the next sentence. We had Bellator, of course. My God. Yeah, look, it's great to see he's in Portugal. He's enjoying some time with his family. You know, we know that Pedro spends all of his time in Ireland and, you know, his family are in Portugal. So I'm sure this is a very, very nice time for him, despite all the craziness of his title shot going amiss. But look, let's go and talk to Pedro. We'll be back in about 20 minutes. So talk to you then. And now I am joined by Pedro Carvalho all the way in Portugal, who was supposed to fight Patricio Pitbull for his world title. Last weekend, two weekends ago now, Pedro, the whole of the European MMA space was nearly in tears when we found out that you had successfully weighed in for your fight with Patricio Pitbull, and then the fight was off. I have so many questions. I even heard that this was out there in the public before the fighters found out about it. I don't know how it happened. I'm dying to find out. But first of all, how are you? Are you safe? Is your family safe? And are all your friends safe?
How's it going, Pete? Yeah, everything is fine. You know, we follow the rules as everyone, or at least as everyone should be, and we are staying home. You know, and that's it. There's no much else to do. You know, that's it. But everything is fine.
That's good to hear. Obviously, health and safety of family and friends is our main concern at the moment, and of course, this growing concern and the spreading of the coronavirus is what led to your Bellator title bout with Patricio being pulled. But can you let us know how that went? I mean, you had weighed in on everything, right?
Yeah. So on like Wednesday of fight week, it was told me that the fight was still on, but it will be close to the public.
Yes.
So I was just like, fine, you know, what matters is the guy show up and I can beat him. That's it. That's the only thing that I want. And then weigh-ins came. We weighed in. We did the mocking weigh-ins. And we arrived to the fight day, you know. And I was at my room having some rest, about to take a nap. And then I received a message from my manager, and then I went to Twitter and I saw a Twitter from Scott Cookers announcing that Bellator show will be canceled. And man, that was heartbreaking. That was a heartbreaking moment. But and I need a couple of hours, you know, and even like 3 days after, I was like I was arriving in Portugal. And I was collecting my luggage, and I was such on a weird feeling. I would look like I was in a bad dream, a weird bad dream, because I was coming back home with nothing, with nothing, when I mean nothing, with like no belt, no fight, no nothing. And it was like really weird. Not, I'm not going to say bad. It was bad, but it was more weird than the bad. And but in the end of the day, I'm happy that Bellator made that decision. And it only proves that they also are concerned about our health, you know, and our health is a priority to them. And I'm really happy that they made that decision and they showed us that our health, our lives matters to them, and not only the money or the profit of the shows, you know. So I'm really happy that they made that decision.
Yes, I mean, it must be a very strange situation, Pedro, when the goalposts are changing all the time. Everything seemed to be changing day to day, as you said, behind closed doors, and then eventually the cancellation. But I know that fighters visualize a lot, and they visualize what the crowd will be like. They visualize how they walk out. Was it very stressful when things were changing, like when it got pushed behind closed doors? And I'm sure even traveling to the event was a concern in some ways, because this was ramping up all the time. It kept on getting more and more severe every day, even every hour, it felt like.
Yeah, to be honest, like, I was, man, like, I'm always like that, but especially for this fight, I was like 300% focused. I really didn't care one bollocks to that, you know, like, I didn't care. Like, things were changing, but I just was so focused on the fight that I just didn't lose time thinking about nothing. Like, if they came to me and say, Pedro, look, we only can do the fight at the lobby of the hotel. It's okay for you. Okay, bring me the gloves. Doesn't matter. You know, I didn't care at all. I didn't care at all, you know. But, you know, it is what it is. This kind of things is out of our hands. And like I've said before, like, these sensitive times, it's time to not be selfish and not think about, oh, I could be like world champion on this, on that, like, listen, I will be world champion sooner or later. So these times are no times to be selfish and think about ourselves. And we must like be on all of this together as one, and just do what, you know, the high entities tell us to do. Because the fastest we do all this together, the fastest we get back to our lives normally.
Absolutely, well said, Pedro. I'm just wondering, like, I mean, we've been talking about your amazing story, you know, how you basically moved to Ireland and put all your chips in this basket, all your chips on the table to become a world champion. And there you are, about to fight for a world title, and it gets taken away by a situation that's completely out of your hands. Is that an emotional moment when you find that out? Like, a man who has given up everything and gained so much over the last 2 years, then to find out this isn't happening. Is that an emotional moment when it feels as though maybe your dream has been taken away, at least postponed until a later date?
You know, like, it was tough. It was really, really tough on the first, like, 2 hours.
You can imagine. Yes.
And specifically at the time that I found out, was really, really tough. But then I cooled down, and it's kind of okay, because me being world champion is something that is inevitable. Be at the top of this sport is something that is inevitable. So it doesn't really, I don't really care if it was on the 13th of March or it's going to be someone later this year or next year. I don't care. That moment will happen. Me be at the top of the sport will happen. So I really don't care. And I'm not even thinking about, oh, that was my chance. No, I will have plenty of more chance. You know, I will be multiple times champion, you know, like, so I don't care. You know, I visualize myself be at the top of the sport. I know what I'm capable of. I know that, you know, I did the hard part, that is be where I am right now. Be where I am right now is, believe me, the hardest thing to achieve. And I did it. So whoop these guys' ass. It's just the fun part. So I'm not really, and I don't want to really lose too much time think about, because that's bad, you know, that's bad for your head, you know, you hit with the head on the wall, like, oh, I could be a world champion right now, oh, I missed my chance, like, fuck it, I don't care, I will have my chance, and besides, you know, I have a contract, so I know that for sure, sooner or later, I will find Patricio inside of the cage. And besides, like I just said, I know where I'm going to be. I know I'll be in the top of the sport. So it's not a thing that worries me, you know. I know where I'm capable and know where I'm going to be.
I was going to ask you, is it hard to find motivation? But you certainly have answered that already. I feel like you still remain as motivated as ever.
I found myself probably as same or even more motivated than I was, wow. You know, like, because not only because all this situation, you know, it just made me more angrier, more, I want more this than ever, but also because, like I said, I try to find positivity and good things, especially on the bad situations. And on this particular one, you know, like the almost the first few weeks when I came to Polska, I didn't came straight to meet my girlfriend and my son. I was at my my mom's house, you know. I did there the quarantine just and I was really grateful to have that experience because I didn't spend that much time like straight like sleeping and living at my mom's house like since I moved to Ireland basically and be back there where everything started, you know. Yes. And see the posters that I had when I was a dreamer and be surrounded all of that environment where a few years ago I was only a dreamer, you know, dreaming that I will be what I am right now. And it just gave me such a boost and a proud feeling of myself, you know. And and right now I couldn't be even more motivated to do more and want more. So, you know, that's what I try to do. And I think that what everyone should try to do. It's a complicated times, but we should focus on the positives, or at least find a solution to find the positives and not focus on the bad stuff.
What posters were on your wall?
But no, posters like you know the show posters, like the first shows that I participated,
wow, cool.
or other stuff like when I was like really a kid, you know, like fight stuff, you know, like really things probably 10 years ago or something. And you know, it was pretty good and pretty cool, you know. And it was just fine to be surrounded and be around, you know, be in my house, in my homegrown house, and everything, the atmosphere, everything, you know. It was just cool. It was like every day was kind of a meditation to me, like be on my own, do my workout, and then be surrounded and think, man, 10 years ago, I was dreaming to be in a position that I am right now. And that's just amazing. The feeling that I was feeling was just amazing. And right now I'm just super pumped. And I'm just focused on that. I don't really want to think about like when it's going to be or how long this is going to be. Yes. Like, I'm in a good place, you know. I'm with my kid. I'm with my girlfriend. I'm healthy. And I'm happy. That's what really concerns me, you know. The rest is rest, and when the time comes, the time will come, and when the time will arrive, I will become the featherweight world champion. So no rush about it. The things will happen.
Yes, that's amazing insight. And I'm just wondering, you know, you spoke to us before the fight, and you were kind of talking about how you spent, you know, you didn't get to spend an awful lot of time with your son as much as you would have liked while you were preparing for all of this, all these fights and this fantastic run you've put together with Bellator. But what's that been like? I mean, I saw the post that you put up yesterday, I believe it was, or over the weekend at some stage, and you look so happy.
Yeah.
So happy.
Yeah.
And your son looks so happy. I mean, this must be an amazing bonding moment for you guys in this crazy situation.
Yeah, it's been crazy, you know, because so this goes all back to 2017, when I just had my first fight from representing SBG in Cage Legacy in front of like 100 people.
Wow.
And finally, because it was a tough year, it was our first year in Ireland, and it was really tough. And finally, we got like a really good thing. That was my first fight. I just won. And we come back, and my girlfriend told me that she needed to talk with me. And she said that she was pregnant. And then all of a sudden, I had no floor. I didn't know what to do. And because basically, our salary was only to pay bills. That's it. We didn't have much more money to anything else. So having a kid, it's an extra, you know, thing that you have. It's an extra bill. That's
absolutely
it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I didn't know what to do. And then we came out with the solution that she will come back to Portugal. I will stay in Ireland. And then we'll see. And so she could also have the safest pregnancy possible. So then I have my second fight for Cage Legacy. I won. And like 1 month later, that's when I got a message from John Kavanagh about a first fight in Bellator, one fight deal. And yeah, and then there was like my son. And then I went to London. You know, I quit my job before the fight. I won the fight. I got my contract. And then basically, and then I went to Portugal. My son was born, and I came back on August, and they stay here. And basically for 18 months, that was my fight against Luca Vitali in Italy, Derek Campos and Sam Cecilia. All those fights, my mentality was, losing never was an option for me. But in this particular case, I couldn't even afford to that, because I knew if I would slip, there would be extra 8 months, or at least 8 months away from my son. So I was fighting not only for my son's future, but also to bring him back close to me, you know, to be able to have financially well, to be all together in Ireland. So all those three, I was just in killing mode. And the results are visible, because those three fights, three finishes, and that just represent what when a man wants really something, and that's what I'm referring when I say that all these guys, they say they want that, but they don't really know what means to want something, you know, to be able to, you know, to give your life to something. And that's how much this sport, all this, it's not about me being the best only. It's much, much, much more else. And that's just the quick example. So like coming back to your question, being able to now be close to my kid, you know, do my workout or whatever, and finishing and be able to hug him and be close to him, it's a blessing, and I'm grateful, and you know, life is good.
You must be very proud of yourself, Pedro. That's incredible. That's an incredible story. That, I mean, look what you've done since you found out that, you know, your partner was pregnant. That's incredible.
Yeah, like I always say, it's you decide what you are and what your life is, like you want, you know, like it. Finding a solution or finding an excuse, it's always an option. And for me, never finding excuse never was an option. Always was finding a solution. Stay positive, and you know, good things sooner or later will happen. And that was mainly my focus from 13 years old. I know when the MMA thing for me never was a thing, because I believe, but everyone around me will say, "Come on, Pedro, MMA will never give you a future." And I doubt, and I said, "Man, you will see. You all will see." And all the way to this situation with my son, be away from my son. So I always kept positive. I know what I'm capable of. I know what my work and my belief together are capable of. And I just stay faithful to myself. And I know, you know, beating guys, whooping their guys' ass, that's just the easy part. And I go back to the question that everyone made me the most before this fight. There was, if fighting for the world belt and fighting a guy like Patricio bring me extra pressure, and I just answer them like, fighting for doing what I love and fighting for a world belt just doesn't bring any pressure to me. Pressure to me is doesn't know if I will have enough money, like I was when I was living in my mom's house, if we'll have enough money to have food or pay the bills, or when I was living in Ireland, you know, if I will have enough money also to pay the bills or this or that, that's pressure. That's real pressure. Fighting for a world title or doing what I love doesn't bring any pressure to me. It's just joy. It's just enjoy. So that's it, you know. That's pretty it.
That's an amazing story, man. You should be incredibly proud of yourself for everything you've achieved already, and you're going to achieve so much more, as we know. But I wanted to ask you, we just were talking about financial pressure, Pedro. A lot is being made of the UFC London fighters not being paid yet, as opposed to you guys who were all paid show and win money after weighing in. I know you were teammates on that card for UFC London, which was cancelled on the week of the fight. Did you expect the UFC to pay up at this stage? I think a lot of people have. And in fact, a lot of people think it looks bad that the UFC haven't paid these fighters, given how Bellator compensated you guys immediately.
Yeah, like I don't really have an opinion about UFC. You know, I'm a Bellator fighter, and what concerns me is that the company for I work for, they just, you know, they did the unbelievable and great action there. They did, yes. You know, they took care of their own athletes, and that's it. I think that's just gives the impression. Of the right impression, because if you have a company and you know you have your workers, their work on daily, you know, they have their families, they have their bills, and they are working to keep the best show for you, and they go out there, they cancel the fight, and they don't pay the fighters, they're just, you know, they're just bad, you know, that's just really bad. But like I've said, like I that really don't bother me, because, and I don't care, because I don't have much to say, because I'm not a UFC fighter, I'm a Bellator fighter, and what concerns me is that Bellator took care of all the athletes in the show that was canceled, and that's, for me, it's just amazing.
Yes, it is. It's very admirable. I must say that as well. Just finally, Pedro, a lot of people listening to Eurobash, they need some things to do. They're bored. They have nothing to do. Do you have any film recommendations? Do you have any fight recommendations? Do you have any workout recommendations? Anything you can tell them to do at all here? They want to be like a champ like you.
Like, first of all, like, I think the most important aspect to, you know, to have anything in this life, it's a mental part, you know. We must believe, we must stay focused, and we must stay faithful to our priorities. But in these times, you know, stay just trying to, like physically wise, it's good to do anything, just anything. It's better than stay in the couch all day. Just anything, like the circuit of sit-ups, push-ups, something like that. The minimal, at least, is always better than couch. And film wise, you know, that's so much stuff, you know. Like I just finished the second season of Narcos Mexico, and
is it good?
I really enjoy that. That from all the Narcos, like the other Narcos never hooked me up, and this one like got me stuck with it from the very first season. That was my favorite one. But you know, there's so many shows, and people just, you know, I think as long people say watch something they like, that what's really matters, because like I've said, we are going through tough times, and as long people stay happy, stay focused on good stuffs, and that's what really matters. And if it's possible to people see something that he actually has some content that will inspire them and make them, you know, reevaluate some stuff on their lives, you know, because we are on the period that we can't do much. We are stuck in our homes. So I think people should embrace these times as they have no much to do to, you know, reevaluate all their life, you know, see, look at the past, look at the present, and look at the future, and see what they really want, the place they are, and what can do, you know, change if they want to something else, you know, because it's never good to really, really, really stay in a comfort zone. So I think people just took this as a blessing, and maybe, you know, do something else. Who knows? You know, if these bad times cannot be a good opportunity to people change their lives. So I think that's the most important stuff.
You're an inspirational man, Pedro Carvalho. That was an incredible, incredible insight into your mind. I am so happy that you are being so positive and you're surrounded by your loved ones and everyone is safe and healthy. I can't wait for you to fight for that title, Pedro. But until then, thank you so much for joining us again. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Pitinia. Well, it's always a pleasure to me to have a chat with you. It's always a good crack.
Absolutely, man. I hope your family stays safe. And of course, you stay safe. And we'll talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Absolutely, 100%. Stay safe, you and your loved ones, and stay positive. That's it.
Amazing. Talk to you soon, Pedro.
Yeah, see you later, Pizzi. Have a good one.
And great to speak to Pedro again. What an inspirational dude he is. Yeah, he is. His story is unbelievable, man.
Just such a welcoming, friendly guy and very focused and real family guy as well, as you said there. Like great sort of representative for Portuguese mixed martial arts. A credit, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So how have you been? I guess I haven't. Is all your family still good? Everyone's still healthy?
It's affecting everyone really at the moment. A couple of friends think they have it. They've been tested and stuff like that. So a family member of mine is waiting on results. They're okay, though. They're improving. So it's worrying, man. It's worrying for everyone, you know. It's just sort of the nature of the situation we're in. But listen, you got to look to the positives and just sort of be grateful that we can try and get all over together. I think the Irish people in general are doing a great job here. Like, I put up a couple of drone shots you might have seen on Twitter and there of people actually staying in. Yesterday morning was crazy, man. I put the drone up for like 10-15 minutes around Dublin 14 here, and there wasn't a sinner on the road. Like, this is 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, no one. It was like a ghost town. And the same this evening at rush hour. There was 3-4 cars in the roads. So people in general in Dublin are doing their thing. And I just hope it is the same across the rest of the city. I know there's been a few incidents. So people just need to cop the fuck on. If this can go from one person to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the world and cause so many deaths, it can happen to anyone. It's right on our doorstep. And I just think people really need to grasp that home. Now, but it's just tough, and I'm sure you're the same as well over there with your fams and all. You're worried about your mom and dad, and you know, everyone's that way. It's a stressful time, but we just got to think of the positives, really.
I just am already thinking about conspiracy theory here, because if your people are getting tested and the Northsiders aren't, I'm starting to scratch my head. My friend Colin Morrisseau has been waiting for a test for 3 goddamn weeks.
Yeah. You know, that happened to my friends as well. I think
he only has one symptom. That's why, though. You know, yeah, I don't think he even has it anymore, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what has to happen. You have to have severe symptoms, have had, you know, their tests sort of go ahead and stuff like that. So it's just mad, man. It's a mad situation. It's unprecedented. And I think they obviously have to look after the people who are iller first, which is understandable. Really is.
Yeah. I'm drinking a lot still. I'm not going to lie to you.
It's still the opposite. It's mad. Everyone's saying that.
I don't know. You said this last time, but you were still having a few cans daily.
No, I wasn't daily. No, not at all. I haven't been daily at all. That's rubbish. No, I honestly swear to God. On Friday, I had 4.
That's what you said to me last week.
I did. Maybe. Well, I haven't been drinking. I definitely haven't been drinking cans daily. Not at all. I've actually drank less in the last 3 weeks than I've drank in years. I had 4 cans, half cans. You know, the small little pale ale cans? Chief. I had 4 Chiefs. Of them. What?
That's, yeah, Chieftain they're called.
I had Brooklyn IPAs. They're the same size can as a Chieftain, like 330ml cans of Coke. I had 4 of them, and I had 2 cans last night, and I didn't drink.
I'm still drinking, though.
Over a week, 10 days before that, so.
That's still drinking.
No, but I'd normally go out on a Friday and Saturday night and Sunday probably and drink 15.
On Thursday,
15
Wednesday.
On a regular basis.
It's not that shocking that you're drinking less seeing as the pubs are closed.
Yeah, well, I am. Like, you know me, I'm a pub guy. I love my few pints and the boozer. And I am. I'm missing it dearly. I'm missing the banter with the boys I have over in Churchtown Stores there. And as we said, what we're going to do is when we get over this shit, that's our first port of call for the Eurobash. And the boys are going to give us the room in the back there as well. I've been chatting to the owner, and we'll spark up a Eurobash classic in there. But drinking the shit.
Get over there
points.
And just start sending it.
Oh yeah, sending, like, we probably won't even finish the podcast, but
sending it.
We'll be imagine how drunk we're gonna be that night. We'll be very drunk.
I'm going to join a rugby team. I'll be so shit faced. what? So you're looking up at the moment. You're looking up all types of equipment and stuff. Yeah. Is that taking up most of your time? I'm getting back into the books. I'm reading books like a fucking lunatic. It's great.
Yeah, I am. I'm looking up, like, literally. I'm not taking the piss. And I said to you there earlier on, like, I didn't get to bed at 8 a.m. this morning. That was largely due to watching
reviews,
products. That's been me for the last fucking month, you know. I've been looking
at... Yeah, it's mad. I don't work at all.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I'm trying to rush forward this gear we're buying because of the current situation. And a lot of equipment and stuff is actually out of stock. So trying to source and get the right price. There's a huge amount of price gouging going on as well, which is fucking disgusting. You know, I have a €50 webcam here and it's been sold, the same one, a Logitech.
It's been sold for
€300, man. Like, what the fuck? These scumbags online. So gear is really tough to come by at the moment because everyone's sort of broadcasting at home, you know, in the fitness industry, you know, remotely from radio stations are doing the same thing as well. So there's huge demand for that sort of stuff. And it's just tough trying to source the gear at the right price as well, you know. So I'm getting a whole load. Like, man, you should see the shit I've ordered already. Like, bloody hell.
Fantastic.
We're blowing it out of the water.
It's important, obviously, to keep fit, keep yourself moving around.
I've been running 10 miles every day.
I've been going out with the dog every day, obviously, but I'm actually going to start some type of indoor workout as of next Monday. So by the time I'm recording next week, I should be at least have my first workout out of the way. I just need another week of eating everything. I'm just fucking eating so much. I mean, I feel like I'm obviously, after my conversation with Paddy Pimblett last weekend, he's continued to send me his food, which is absolutely amazing. Like, I mean, he makes me so hungry, man. The shit he's sending me, he's just destroying it. He's having the best isolation I've seen just based on the food he's eating. I need to keep that up.
I think Joe McColgan's the same. He's putting on serious weight. I was texting him there today.
But dude, boys are ripped. Yeah. Like, it's a different story. Like, yeah. When I'm already fat and I'm just digging myself into a grave here, basically.
I haven't eaten red meat in a month tomorrow. It's been a month.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's good for me. I've had a little bit of chicken, I'm not going to lie, maybe once a week. And bar that, it's been all like pasta, vegetarian sort of stuff, and it's been tough.
I saw you buckle for the old Elephant and Castle chicken wings there the other day.
I had to. I treated myself. I was like, fuck it. But no, I definitely feel the bloatiness has gone away. Like, you know, I don't feel as that sort of thing. But to be honest, I'm not going to lie, Pete, I think tomorrow I might get a Bunsen delivered down to the gaff. Just like, listen, a month. Like, I'm not going to be eating meat on a regular basis as much as I used to anymore. Why not? Am I going to
treat yourself?
Do you think so?
I'm going to allow it. Yeah, I'm going to allow it. Absolutely.
I think so.
I had a bizarre experience actually. On I was out for a walk with Elaine and the dog, and we're walking up a big, huge main road, and suddenly everybody's out on their balconies clapping. And it's obviously for the help.
My nephew, the same thing. He didn't know what was going on.
Oh man, I was walking out going, "What the fuck?" Like, I was like, everyone's out on their balconies clapping, like, "Yay!" But I mean, it was mad. We're walking up the road clapping. Obviously, there's people on the other side of the road walking, they're clapping. But I mean, it's actually scary because I've never seen anything like that happen before. And it's like,
my nephew really ran home. 21-year-old nephew ran home. He didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, in all seriousness, it's crazy that like this is happening. Like, it feels like a throwback to, I think Elaine was saying, like, it nearly feels like something that you'd read in Goodnight, Mr. Tom, when the Blitz was going down or something. It's fucking eerie, man. It's incredibly unsettling, some of the stuff that's happening at the moment. But we're all in it together, as you said. I mean, we're all feeling the same way. It's very strange. We've never dealt with anything like this before. So, we just got to keep our heads screwed on and keep on reacting, because that's the toughest job we can do.
That's the toughest part, you know, really is. It's keeping that mental focus straight. It's very, very tough. And, you know, you're worried about people constantly, but you just have to. You just have to keep a positive outlook on it. And I think that's very important. I've struggled with that the last 3 weeks. But I think, you know, another good thing here, you know, we've fucking darkness nearly all year fucking around here. It's great that the clocks have gone forward. So we have an extra bit of hour and you can see the daylight creeping in there. And that'll give people spirits to be able to sit out in their garden. And it's still cold enough here, but it's gradually getting a little bit warm. And I think that's important as well. People get out and get a bit of sunlight and don't be just confined to your house 24/7. You know what I mean? Even if it's, you know, walking around the garden 20 times or whatever, just fucking do it. Like, you know what I mean?
Get your 10,000 steps in, guys.
There you go. I fucking need to start doing it. I'm stuck with this fucking computer.
I've been doing all the interviews for the show and that today, so I haven't got out yet. So I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to go out and for about for a good brisk walk. Unfortunately, Reggie has already been brought out by Elaine, so I'll be going solo. But yeah, I hope everybody stays safe and I hope your families are safe. It's going to be a very trying time. We're going to be here for you always every Tuesday morning. Keep liking, keep sharing, keep this movement growing. And fuck me, is it growing? This is great in terms of, you know, how many people are engaging with the show and listening to the show. It means a lot to us. It definitely keeps us 100%. Going as well. And look, just be safe and be kind to each other, because it's gonna be bad and it's gonna get worse, unfortunately.
Petey, I love you.
I love you too, bud. Stay safe.